are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. Sashay. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Living for the weekend. But I hope you have a great weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it's not, and you know you got to get it done, it's important that you get it done, you'll do it. You won't put it off. You're not going to procrastinate because that's not who you is. And that's why we love you and appreciate you getting it done. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, then you can always go to timeforanawakening.com to our archives. Look for podcasts, click on that, and then there will be African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled African Perspectives. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, on Mondays, Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia, Brother Wahad, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then it's Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. On Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it is time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard this evening at 8 p.m. On Sunday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., that's right, it's not me, it's Sister POC, every Sunday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., her program, Revive. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., it's time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned business. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. Check out the products that they have. I periodically will go online and tell you about all those products to make sure you know what they are and to make sure that you go online to patronize and get them. I know one thing that I wanted to happen this past weekend. Last weekend was for Brother Lamar from We Buy Black to come to our Us Lifting Us reception and talk with us about some kind of way we can work together because they're trying to develop a supermarket. And brothers and sisters, you know we need a supermarket. You know, it's one of the one of the four things I think that are very important for a community to have some type of control: a bank, a school, a hospital, and a supermarket. You know, we got brothers and sisters in agriculture, sustainability agriculture, and they need a place that those fruits and vegetables and other things can be displayed and sold. So, we buy black. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tahimba. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Give Brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. I am not sure if the trip next month in to Ghana is still on. Excuse me, to Senegal and Gambia is still on because of the situation that we're experiencing. The COVID-19 virus, the COVID-19. But he has it scheduled. Senegal and Gambia, April 3rd through the 13th for $3,300. And then there's the trip to Ghana, repatriation investment, May 25th to June 5th, $3,700. And then in November, November 20th through the 30th to South Africa. From the 20th through the 30th in South Africa for $3,700. And then at the end of the year, December 24th to January 5th, 2021, back to Ghana, repatriation investment tour, $3,700. And April, next year, April 2nd through the 12th, back to Senegal and Gambia for $3,500. $400 deposit down. And even if you did it now and you said that, okay, I wanted to go on the trip next month, but it didn't happen, you can go to any one of the other trips to continue to pay on it. I know it's $3,300 for that trip. And I know next year it's going to be $3,500, a couple hundred dollars more. But I mean, the accommodations are great. Go online. Look at the pictures on Facebook.com/Bomani. Go online and look at the videos on YouTube.com/Bomani2007 of what this brother has done. Believe me, it's worth it. It's a trip of a lifetime. Brother Renoko, my good friend, Brother Renoko Rashidi, he's in the States. Thank God he didn't get, caught what he couldn't get back, but he's in the States and he has two trips upcoming in October, October 5th through the 16th, Uganda and Rwanda. I keep saying to you all the time, and I'll say it again, you need to go on his website, drrenoko.com, and look at the photos of Rwanda and Uganda. Beautiful. And then of course, going to Kemet and, I'm saying you need to be a part of that trip. It's going to Kemet. And that is the end of the month, October 22nd through November 4th. October 22nd through November 4th. And the beautiful photos of ancient Kemet sailing down the Nile and some of the statues and the museums and so forth. So those are two outstanding trips that Renoko has in the month of October towards the end of the year. And they're about $4,200. $4,200. Habesha Incorporated.org. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org and look what these brothers and sisters are doing. They are doing the work. It's just not an idea. It's just not a concept. It is in practice. They are doing the work. Habesha. Their mission. It's a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in agricultural and cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. Habesha and the programs that they provide. So check out Habesha, and believe me, you'll be glad that you did, and be important that you support what they're doing, because they're about to build the Kashi
right there, the Kashi building, excuse me, village in Ghana. The work is being done. It's supposed to be ready by the end of the year, of this year. I haven't seen any latest photos on the website, but what I have seen, I'm definitely encouraged. I'm motivated. It is beautiful. So check that out, okay? All right. The Shrine of the Black Madonna. Shrine of the Black Madonna, located here in Atlanta. They have various locations in Houston and Detroit. Shrine of the Black Madonna here, hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7 and Sunday from 1 to 3. And they have it all. They have furniture, clothing, the red, black, and green, the gas shoes, artwork, the Kwanzaa kits. They got it all at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. They also have an African Holocaust Museum. But more importantly, they have books. And if you call them at 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676, and find out if they have the book that you desire, or if you go in there and look and it's looking like you, they don't have it, they'll get it for you. Believe me, they will. They also have a history class every Saturday, tomorrow, free and open to the public. The African history class of Know Thyself. Baba Olutunji is your instructor and your guide. And it's from 1:30 to 3:30. Know Thyself, the African history class. 1:30 to 3:30. You know, I need to contact them to find out if that's still going on in light of what's happening. Because, I mean, like, just being real, anything that would bring people together in any number, although the class, that's around about what it has. I mean, the most of I've seen in the class is like about, I'd say, 15 people. And I've seen it as sparse. Because, I mean, I go periodically. I don't go every weekend. But there was one stretch I went like 3 weeks in a row, which was pretty cool. Because, I mean, it's history, and I love it, you know. And like I said, I even have the history library, the multimedia library. But when I got it, it was 4.5. Now it's 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. So if you can't make it to the classes, but you want that knowledge, there you go. Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, located off of Georgia Highway 166, the Greenbrier Mall. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Great books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, all kind of good stuff. Mama Nia has done an outstanding job. Love Mama Nia. In fact, I'm going to be doing my presentation next month, April 22nd, history program that I do at the Medu Bookstore. Also, too, Sister Bayuna Bella will be promoting her book, The Sheroes of the Haitian Revolution, at the Medu Bookstore the week prior. So I'm happy to say that and promote that. Give Sister Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. At the Greenbrier Mall, the Medu Bookstore. The other bookstore I promote, of course, is Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, Brother Kazimde Ajamu, located in Lithonia, 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. They also have the shoes, T-shirts, and all kinds of good stuff at the Black Dot. There is light in the Black Dot. Also, too, we have we have Us Lifting Us. The Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, Us Lifting Us. Their Thursday night broadcast last night from 9 to 10, Us Lifting Us. Number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, in the spirit of Ujamaa, or as I like to say, family-centered economics. I want to read this statement, Us Lifting Us, the statement of the co-op for 2020, and the awesome power of the sovereign psyche. The vision statement, to be the preferred and premier global economic cooperative community for people of African ancestry. The vision statement. The mission statement, to build and sustain a legacy of global cooperative business institutions for the economic sovereignty of people of African ancestry. Us Lifting Us, our cooperative organization, is going through a critically important energizing stage in its growth and maturation, in large part because of missed opportunities associated with Cafe Ulu. We are confronted and forced to view everything about our co-op with new eyes. We are being moved in profound ways to mature and align ourselves with a meaningful transformation for a new path and a new birth. For Us Lifting Us in this new phase and beyond, it's not enough to excel and execute proficiently. Growth and success in the context of self-authentic freedom now becoming our only option, in essence, our DNA. We started in 2011 with our study group, which met face-to-face weekly for more than a year. And then in 2013, with the legal formation of ULU, we've always had sound ideas around economic empowerment and growing an alternative economy to serve our people. We researched and were careful to study and analyze different economic models from around the world and in different historical settings. In fundamental ways, we covered the essential basis and developed an economic empowerment plan that is perhaps among the most progressive ever offered to our people. However, not until now, with lessons of direct experience and scrutiny, we are endowed with the one element most needed in completing a success formula for Us Lifting Us. That element being a sovereign consciousness, or the sovereign psyche. The mission of Us Lifting Us is a very ambitious pursuit. Our success at building and sustaining economic power for our people will naturally place us at odds with very powerful forces in the world. Many of these forces have historically been involved in the domination and exploitation of our people and our resources. The institutions and the infrastructure we build now and in the future must possess strengths and qualities that make them and Us Lifting Us overall uniquely suited for this very special task. The space, economic, social, economic, cultural, and perhaps spiritual, from which ULU is rebirthing itself, is sovereign consciousness, or sovereign psyche. Ezra Ahon, in his book entitled The Sovereign Psyche, Systems of Chattel Freedom versus Self-Authentic Freedom, points out that sovereignty, foremost in an energizing mindset, consciousness, and thought process that provides a people with a special syntax and interconnectedness of ideas, ethos, rationales, interpretations, and actions through which they define and express the cultural, political, ideological, and historical particularities of who they are versus who they are not. Note that I use the word energizing because it is important to understand that sovereignty is just as much energy as it is mentally. Based on this energizing consciousness, we are quickly growing in our knowledge and grasp of essential process systems and institutions required to fulfill our unique and sacred mission. As we assess and report on the state of the co-op, it is critical that we all understand the value and central role sovereign consciousness plays in our future success. In fact, there is no real success without it. The ULU board and its standing committees has set very aggressive targets for growth and increased capacity for this year, 2020 and beyond. To assist us in this pursuit, we have refined our mission and our vision statement, and we have given greater structure and support to vital administrative units. But more than anything else, we have surrendered ourselves to that consciousness which will not be denied. Our grandparents and our great-grandparents told us of the power of a mind made up. At least, and through struggle, we now know profoundly the power of the sovereign mind, the sovereign psyche. From here, from this position, and with love and assistance, all things are achievable. Ashe, ashe. That is the statement coming out of this past weekend, that even though we didn't have the conference, many people were there, the board met, and they came up with this statement, and we support it, and we're going to work towards it. That is us lifting us to economic development, cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Ashe. Akabin Institute has been educating our young warriors for many years, and they need our support. Akabin Institute. Make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But if you want to donate by Cash App or PayPal, you can do so. The $ and Yah M. Baruti. And make your donation. Sanjay Dash Haiti, my good sister, Gabrielle Arreria, in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. And the program she has, you need to go online to check it out. Sanjay-Haiti.org. And the beautiful work that she is doing with those young people. Education, health, and entrepreneurship with agricultural sustainability. I'm telling you. They deserve to be supported. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. March 19th. White nationalism is what puts you in bondage. Atum Ashanti. I remember meeting Atum Ashanti and her father at a community festival shortly after our excitement over learning of her poem, White Nationalism Put You in Bondage, and the seething indignation ignited in European and Negro communities. I remember standing there over conversing with her father about all the hell he was catching for speaking our truth and looking over at her playing nearby in the grass and thinking, wow, a nation of grown Caucasian folk afraid of a little girl. What kind of frightened mind would put such energy into destroying a 7-year-old girl? Affirm, I protect our children from others' fears. Affirm, I protect our children from others' fears. White nationalism put you in bondage. So did. You know, the stuff is the truth. You know, but just as the saying goes, they can't handle the truth. They can't handle the truth. Yeah. March 20th. The slave that kills his master practices an act of legitimate self-defense. Louis Gama. Violence is always the last resort, but it does not become the last choice after repeated and unreasonable aggressions by others. It becomes the last choice in each aggression. I was always taught that you don't hit first. You stand your ground, but you do not strike your opponent first. However, once your opponent strikes you, you have the human right and responsibility to use whatever force is necessary to arrest that threat. Sometimes this takes a simple blow. Sometimes it requires breaking a bone or rendering someone unconscious. If you push comes to shove, it can even call for dealing death. This is the reality of a powerful, unyielding love of one's and one's people and one's humanity. The main problem with us using the don't hit first logic, and it is a most serious problem when we as African people are dealing with Europeans, is that they have struck us again and again without an effective or, in many cases, any response. No response. In fact, they have struck that first blow so many times already that it appears that we have become so numb from their blows that we can't tell that they're still hitting us. How many first strikes do they have to deliver before we realize that they long ago crossed the retaliatory line? You can't talk peace in the heat of battle. You can't wait for the first blow if that blow will kill you. There is no returning to the battlefield from death. There is no pride in a warrior falling without taking victims. Affirm, I effectively respond to the first blow. Affirm, I effectively respond to the first blow. March 21st. Commit yourself to positive change in thought and action and start contributing on a consistent basis to the building and maintenance of institutions that are working for the total freedom and independence of all African people throughout the world, and the rebuilding of our modern and independent civilization and culture. Bantu Shaka. As long as there is injustice, there will be warriors. Warriors are not accidents. They are created through cursed circumstances by spirit. They are sent to resolve discord and return righteous order, first to their people, then to this planet. Any lesser ends does not bring forth warriors. And in an enduring hell, insufficiently dealt with by righteous wars, only produces wanton killers, tyrants, charismatic barbarians, parasites, and other unconscious misleaders who only leave a warrior's impression. They are not warriors. These are opportunists. Warriors are called. Their end is Ma'at. In preparation for battle, they are honed in the fires of inhumanity, made fearless by the worst of this insanity's unbearable punishment. Warriors come in their time, not before or after. They are brought forth when they are needed. Warriorhood is a calling for which we have no choice. Warriors are compelled by the spirit to do this work. It is a creator-given mission. Their choices only lie in accepting this charge and deciding how to fulfill it. Affirm. I am where I'm supposed to be, doing what I'm supposed to do. Affirm. I am where I'm supposed to be, doing what I'm supposed to do. Ashe. The Inye Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. It is Women's Month. I'm not sure what they call it, Women's History Month or Women's Honor Women's Month, or I don't know what they call it. But I know that for me, I always honor women. I apologize that I'm trying to get my music together, and still a lot of the music that I had, I'm still trying to get it up on how I play music on my program. And so I'm going to play at the break the sisters that, what's the sister's name? Yeah, Janet Harris, saxophone, and then Sister Althea Renee, I think she's on flute. So, you know, I'll play that. But there's a couple of other women artists that I love, and I would love to have played them, but I don't have them on the playlist. I have them somewhere. I just got to put them on that playlist because, you know, I need to put women up every now and then. Please play some sisters and, you know, some vocalists and so forth. Because, you know, I ain't like that. I know that. I ain't like that, you know. But there's been so many women in the history of our people, warriors, queens, statespersons, you know, women who have done monumental things, women who we need to understand how important it is. Because, see, for us, not like the European, we understand the importance of women and complementarity. Because of Ma'at. What is Ma'at? Truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, balance, order, reciprocity, balance. If you have a man, you got to have a woman, a king or a queen, good and evil. There's that balance to maintain order. And we respected that complementarity. When you look at ancient Kemet, which is thousands of years older than any other civilization on the planet, it shows you that we respected women. We revered women. Women were side by side with men in ruling over the society as examples. They weren't relegated to a second class position. They weren't dogged out. You know, I look at, and I think about what I'm saying, look at Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop and his cradle, his two cradle theory of human development. And I look at how we develop in the so-called southern cradle, where the weather is warm, is conducive, and so forth. And, you know, men and women are working together. And if so, if the man was out of pocket, you know, she would like, bump you then. I'm going to go down the road. You know, it's another group of people, villagers who, you know, I can just take me and these couple of kids or whatever. I'll just take this from you. But in the northern cradle, where Europeans came up out of that medieval, out of that icebox, where it's darker, very unyielding, ungiving, harsh, creates a mentality of selfishness and greediness and male domineering, you know, very hardcore patriarchal system. Bop the woman upside the head and drag her into the cave. So even though she was treated very harshly, she was like, I ain't going to go out there. It's dark out there. Don't have a lot of food out there. At least they got some food and it's warm in here. I don't like how I'm being treated, but I'm scared out there. Animals are out there, you know? So I'll just acquiesce. I'll just give in. I'll just capitulate to this evil treatment that I'm receiving. But that mindset is still pervasive. That's why you have homosexuality. I'm just going to keep it real, like I always do on this program. Baba Manahochi. Great scholar, a great man. In fact, I knew him in Milwaukee, his wife, at the African naming ceremony at our festival. She gave me my name, Oshiemi Adelabu. And he moved here to Atlanta his last few years. And he said that I studied African culture. Nowhere in my studies of African cultures, African cultures of different people, is there homosexuality. There is now throughout the continent because of colonization. There was an imposition by this government, Barack Obama, to say if you want some aid, then you better, you know, accept these alternative lifestyles as well. You know, not that I am homophobic, because I am not. I have relatives that are homosexual. I don't shun them. I don't condemn or condone them. But what I promote, what I am promoting, is African men and women together for family. It is the foundation. We need each other. We need to support one another. We need to respect one another. We need to learn to trust one another. So let's, the rest of this month, I know there's only a few more days in the month. I apologize about that. I picked up on the Women's Month. Although that's, I don't know if it's something that was done by women. I don't know if it's something that's done by the society. I don't know. But I do know they're always making some stuff up. But we and I have honored women 24/7, 365. Because I know how important women are. I know what they do. I know what they bring. They bring a beautiful energy. And sometimes that energy, no matter what the endeavor, is necessary. Whether it's us lifting us, whether it's any other program, education, whatever it is. Two women I'm going to talk about today that probably you've never heard of. Sister Callie House. Probably have never heard of Sister Callie House. But you need to know about her. She, you know, one thing about Callie House that's interesting, that she was an interesting sister, interesting figure, that she picked up the mantle of petitioning coming out of, because she was in captivity, coming out of the idea that, you know, we should receive pensions for our captivity, for the forced labor that we had. And so her, this brother named Dickerson, Isaiah Dickerson, developed the National Ex-Slave Mutual Relief, Bounty, and Pension Association in 1894. Sister Callie House. In fact, there's a headquarters of it. You can see Brother Dickerson on the left and Sister Callie House on the right. The headquarters of the Ex-Slave Mutual Relief, Bounty, and Pension Association of the United States of America in Nashville, Tennessee. In Nashville, Tennessee. Remembering Callie House, an early reparations advocate, her grassroots organization, the National Ex-Slave Pension and Relief, Bounty, and Pension Association, lobbied for federal legislation in support of pensions for formerly captive people. You know, as I read things, I automatically put, I feel, and believe me, I feel strongly that the words that should be there, because if you say words have meaning and you keep saying and putting us into the word slave, you continue to give an opinion or an image that's what we are. That definition of slave does not fit who we are. We were not slaves. We were captives. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We never submitted. We fought. We fought on the continent. We fought in the Middle Passage. We continue to fight today. It's an ongoing battle for the minds of our people. Because if I keep putting slave into your mind, that's how you will think. We were captives. And what does a captive want to do? That's right, brothers and sisters. A captive wants to get free. A captive wants to get free. Reparations or compensation for the ills and devastation of captivity, apartheid, racial and pigmentation, oppression, is a continuous topic. There is no denying captivity took a horrific toll on the lives and psyche and physical condition of people of African descent in this country. It is only natural that African people would seek, American African people would seek redress for the privatization and exploitation we suffered and endured for centuries. But the oppressor is unwilling to even address the issue, and they mean to keep the issue suppressed and out of public consciousness. One of the first Africans in America to call for relief and restitution for enslaved Africans was Callie House. Actually, her name was Callie Guy, who was born in 1861 in captivity in Rutherford County near Nashville, Tennessee. At the age of 22, she married William House, and the couple had 5 children. Miss House worked as a washerwoman and a seamstress to help support her family. And her husband died. After her husband died, according to the records, Miss House did get some school learning. Miss House was influenced by a pamphlet she read in 1891 entitled Freedmen's Pension Bill, a plea for American freedmen, which intrigued her, and she became hooked on the idea. She collaborated with Isaiah Dickerson from the National Ex-Captive Mutual Relief Bounty and Pension Association in 1894. Dickerson had worked with a Caucasian newspaper man named William Vaughn, who advocated for reparations for captive persons. Vaughn felt reparations would stimulate the Southern economy, although I think Vaughn was not from the South. He was actually from the North, you know. But House and Dickerson broke with Vaughn and went out on their own, traveling throughout the South, advocating for pensions for formerly captive brothers and sisters as a means to support them in their current condition. House and Dickerson organized chapters on a local level throughout the South that functioned like mutual aid societies. A member of the local organization paid dues, and with the money was used to care for the sick, disabled, and burying the dead. These were perilous times for American Africans, as Caucasian violence, intimidation, oppression were being systematically sanctioned throughout the nation. Remember, brothers and sisters, they just did it. Damn the consequences. There were no consequences. They did it. They could just come up with an idea. Some brother accosted a Caucasian woman and we'll suppress your community. We'll assault your people. And then whatever job that we did have, you understand that we had to behave in a certain way. Very degrading, very dehumanizing. On the national level, the National Ex-Captive Mutual Relief Bounty and Pension Association held conventions, elected officers, lobbied for federal legislation in support of pensions for formerly captive persons. House's campaign was a grassroots movement. It received little attention or support from American African leaders like Booker T. Washington or W.E.B. Du Bois, and many Caucasians felt threatened by the prospects of an American African seeking payment for the labor during a time which many anti-African feelings were being manipulated and shaped into Caucasian supremacist legislation and behavior. How dare they talk about, you know, I know based upon their behavior, if the shoe was on the other foot, how would they behave? And you and I both know the answer. The federal government soon began to spy on House and her movement. A disinformation campaign was waged against her, and she resigned from her position as assistant secretary of the organization she helped direct and start. Nevertheless, House continued to organize chapters throughout the South and spread the word. House even sued the U.S. Treasury Department for, what is that, $68,075,388.99 in 1915, based upon the money raised from in captive people's labor and cotton taxes paid in the state of Texas. The lawsuit garnered wider attention for the movement and raised the profile of the organization. Of course, the Federal District Court of Appeals threw the case out, saying the government was immune against legislation. And of course, the other one was statute of limitations. Her filing the lawsuit did not set well with the Caucasian power structure, especially during the post-Reconstruction era. The following year, the U.S. Postmaster indicted House on charges of fraud. The Nashville District Attorney also filed charges against Ms. House. The trial was a total farce. The evidence was weak, flimsy at best. No victims were named. There was no evidence offered that Callie House personally benefited from the money she raised. Yet all of the Caucasian male jurors convicted House of mail fraud. She was sentenced to 1 year and a day in prison. She was sentenced to the Jefferson County, Missouri Penitentiary and released early for good behavior. Callie House's grassroots organization and pension movement served as a template for future empowerment campaigns during an era of ruthless and virulent racism and oppression. Not surprisingly, the U.S. government used kangaroo courts to undermine and derail the movement like the Universal Negro Improvement Association. Decades later, the government upped the ante with its wide-ranging COINTEL probe in the latter part of the 20th century. Callie House made the transition in 1928, but her legacy of tireless, righteous activism lives on, and her touch for reparations and her torch for reparations was picked up and carried on by the likes of Queen Mother Moore and the National Coalitions for Black for Reparation in America in COBRA. So, man, Sister Callie House, it's an honor to even talk about her. I have more information. Sister wrote a book, Dr. Mary Frances Berry. Mary Frances Berry was a member of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, especially when it was strong, when they instituted affirmative action programs until Ronald Reagan came in and weakened it. But she wrote a book on Callie House, My Face is Black. Yeah. Sister Mary Frances Berry. And in fact, in her discussion, about that, she talked about how she did the research and so forth, and how, how interesting it was that this strong sister did not get the support even from us. It was, in fact, they were talking about, you're going to make white folks mad. Don't do that. We trying to get some bills passed for voting. get a few jobs. We trying to integrate this society. We don't want you talking about y'all got to pay us millions of dollars. No. But her organization had a master membership, just like the Universal Negro Improvement Association, of hundreds of thousands. What's interesting then and today, we can't get an organization to even get thousands. Here I'm talking about, just got finished talking about Us Lifting Us. Us Lifting Us, the idea we should have hundreds of thousands, if not over a million. Just here in America, let alone globally. Because Us Lifting Us is a global organization. The ideal is global. We have 600 members. When I joined a number of years ago, before I even moved here to Atlanta, I was like in the 80s, late 70s or early, I think 82 or something like that, on the number of people who had joined Us Lifting Us. Man. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll talk more about Women's History Month and how important it is that we celebrate women. I'm going to definitely have a program next Friday. I'm going to try to put it together, talk to a few sisters. Love to have that kind of program where I can get, because I've tried it a couple of times, honestly, just couldn't get it together. But I see that my sister Esmira is coming back. She's got some beautiful pictures from her travels, from these conferences that she's been at on the continent and in Europe. You know, Sister Esmira is just a beautiful woman. I admire her so much. And she's a legislative assistant to Congresswoman Gwen Moore of Wisconsin, but she has another agenda. Believe me, she does. And that agenda is to look after and advocate on the world stage for our people. You know, love Esmira. And Sister Bonisiwa and a few others, you know, sisters that call in, you know, like Queen Ali and others. So it's Women's Month. So we want to focus on talking about women. So we'll be right back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us because we're going to be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com, which, of course, is the number one, 2 years in a row, the number one Black Talk Radio Network podcast in the world. Not just in the world. And I'm honored and happy to be a part of Black Talk Radio Network and Time for an Awakening. You have listened to Sister Jeanette Harris on saxophone and Sister Althea Renee on flute. And their renditions of All I Do Is Think About You and We Are One. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. This program, African Perspectives. And then on Monday evenings, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, followed by Let's Buy Black 365, and then Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey at 9 p.m. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers at 8 p.m. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC at 8 p.m. And on Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. on Thursdays. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Sunday at 11 a.m., it's Revive once again with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 noon, it's the Warm Valentine Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness every Friday today from 4 to 6 on Blog Talk Radio. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness with my good friend and brother, Brother Yusuf Muhammad. And the number to call is 563-999-3089, 563-999-3089. It's this Women's Month, and I've already introduced you to one sister that you may not have known, but now you do. And, tell others about her because she was a courageous woman, no doubt. Like all the sisters are, a lot of courage. But Sister Callie House, considering what she was doing and especially in organizing, in their mindset of the European, how dare you? And then talking about some pensions, trying to get some money, fighting for reparations. How dare you? Yeah, they put her in prison for a year, And her partner, Brother Dickerson, he passed, and she had to pretty much go it by herself. But I'm quite sure she had a lot of people because they were organized. That's the thing. But obviously, even though you're organized in the midst of chaos and evilness, it still ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. Another sister we're going to talk about is Sister Sharshi McIntyre. I saw her at, I'm not sure if it was in Cobra, if it was in NBUF, National Black United Front. Not sure, but it was in Chicago at the then Illinois, say for inner city studies. And now it's named the Dr. Jacob Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies, named after Baba Jehudi, Baba Jacob Carruthers. And she was impressive, Sister Sharshi McIntyre. And so being Women's Month, this is coming out of Chicago Crusader. My good brother and friend, Brother Conrad World, he has a column that he writes once a week. And it's dated last week, but since it is Women's Month, and this is most pointed on time. Dr. Sharshi McIntyre, a great American-African woman. And it shows her book, Criminalizing a Race, Free Blacks During Captivity, Sister Sharshi McIntyre. I often think of Sister Sharshi McIntyre, who had a great impact on all of us in the African liberation movement. I miss her dearly. I miss the late night talks, advice, and consultation. I'm sure that many
Other activists, scholars, and leaders in our movement also miss her. Sister Sharshi, like Queen Mother Moore, was one of the queen mothers of our movement. During Women's History Month, let us briefly review Dr. Sharshi McIntyre's great contributions. On Saturday, May 5, 1999, the African Liberation Movement worldwide learned of the passing into eternity in New York City of our great queen, sister, queen mother, Dr. Sharshi Charlotte Lawrence McIntyre. Although Sister Sharshi was not a household name in the African community in this country, she was one of our leaders, behind-the-scenes scholars, leaders, organizers, and activists who worked tirelessly for the liberation of African people and Native American people. Sister Sharshi had indigenous Native American lineage in her family. Sister Sharshi had battled with effects of lupus and other illnesses for over 20 years. Even though she was often in severe pain, she continued to travel to important movement meetings, keeping a busy lecture schedule, researched vigorously, worked as a professor of humanities and chair of the English Language Studies Department in New York at Old Westbury. Sister Sharshi was the first woman president of the African Heritage Studies Association, founded by our great ancestor, Dr. John Henry Clark. She served on the executive board for many years and used this position to help as a Jegna. See, once again, as I told you, you know, words, you know. And so I've trained my mind and I trained myself vigorously. That's why I don't use, I mean, you know, I cuss. If people know me, they, because I've done it even on this program. So I do cuss. But, you know, you could train yourself to use the most appropriate words. And I hear Brother Conrad uses the word mentor. Well, of course, we don't want to use mentor because of who mentor was in the fairy tale or the fiction of the Iliad. Because Odysseus gives his son over to a mentor who abuses his son. So we don't want to use mentor. So it's an African word, Jegna, which means the same thing, a teacher. You know, somebody asked me, what would a person who studies under that person be? A Jegna, just like they call the mentor, mentee. I don't know. I'll come up with something. But I'll read that again. She served on the executive board for many years and used the position to help as a Jegna many young researchers and scholars in their development. I attended her celebration of life on Friday, May 25, 1999, at St. James Presbyterian Church in Harlem, New York. More than 1,000 people from all walks of life attended and participated in the celebration, including her husband of 41 years, renowned instrumentalist Dr. Bukinda McIntyre, and her two sons, her two perfect sons, as she called them, Khalil and Kanji. My estranged colleague and friend, the late Dr. Jacob Carruthers, who worked closely with Sister Sharshi over the years, was not able to attend the celebration, but wrote a beautiful, succinct statement that I was able to present to the family. Baba Jake, as we called him, wrote, "On behalf of the Temple of the African Community of Chicago and the Kemetic Institute, I wish to make our tribute on the occasion of the transition of beloved sister and fellow worker, Dr. Sharshi Charlotte Lawrence McIntyre, Ma'akuru, voice is truth, the voice is true, Ma'akuru, in Kemetic language, Ma'akuru, the voice is true." Sister Sharshi was our chief, a selfless leader in our movement who contributed mightily, spiritually, and materially to our projects. Continuing, Baba Jake expressed that Sister Sharshi McIntyre's specialty was promoting goodwill, friendship, love, unity among the various organizations and personalities in our movement. In this regard, she was without peer. She promoted us all, often remaining in the background, although her spirit was always at the forefront. In concluding, Baba Jake made this profound point. Sharshi always exuded the qualities of African womanhood, an obedient daughter, a caring sister, a devoted wife, and a loving mother. Whatever the measure, she set the standard. One of Sister Sharshi McIntyre's great scholarly contributions was her book, Criminalizing a Race, Free American Africans During Our Captivity. Given the European extremist assault of the criminal injustice system on African people in this country, I think it would be fitting tribute to Sharshi to read and reread this most important book. In our everyday conversations in the American African community, the issue of African males and the disproportionate number of them in prison in America's jails is frequently discussed. Most of these discussions center around the current problems of drugs, youth violence, poor education, lack of economic opportunities, poor family life, lack of proper racial identity and cultural direction. Often, the missing aspects of these discussions is the historical context of the foundation of European Caucasian extremism and the criminal justice system and its multi-billion dollar prison industrial complex. Sister Sharshi's book is a rare and profound African-centered analysis of the structural design of this nation that has produced this disproportionate number of imprisoned Africans in America, particularly American African males. Without a clear historical understanding of the continuous and growing trend of the incarcerated of Africans, American African males, we will not be able to counteract this long-standing public policy of this country. Sharshi's book helps us understand this issue. A key revelation in Sister Sharshi McIntyre's book is her explanation of the development of America's prison system and its immediate impact on American African people. She points out, to distinguish the prisons from early jails and to suggest the essence of what the institution should be doing, those do-gooders coined a new name, penitentiaries, implying that the prisoners would be taught to be penitent regarding their crimes. To be penitent, of course, means to feel remorse, be apologetic of what has happened. But a lot of times we didn't do nothing. We were framed right after captivity and definitely right after Reconstruction. You could be put in prison for loitering. Or you could just be put in there just because they wanted to put you there. Just because they wanted to do it. Found you walking down the street. In this connection, Dr. Sharshi McIntyre asserted, these do-gooders created penitentiaries for the reform of deviants. They considered free Africans in America a natural population for this new institution that began imprisoning American African males as far back as 1790. Those of us in the National Black United Front, NBUF, and other American African organizations have truly missed Sister Sharshi. Her spirit is guiding our work, and she would be particularly proud of our work in the reparations movement. Sister Sharshi was a strong advocate for reparations for African people. Let us continue to lift up the spirit of Sister Sharshi McIntyre and the millions of other ancestors who contributed so much. Ashe. Shem Hotep. Go in peace. Isante Sana. Thank you. That's Dr. Conrad World, my good friend, my good brother, in Chicago, and the work that he has done in writing for the Crusader and all the other stuff that he has done. We have a caller, 602. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie.
Hey, Brother Marcus. How are you, sir?
I'm doing excellent, good brother.
Good.
You know, I remember that same doctor you're talking about. He used to work with that brother there, James McIntosh.
Uh-huh.
Semotap, right? Wasn't he a part of Semotap?
That I don't know.
Semotap. They used to be a part of this organization that they you know, when the news media put out misinformation,
okay,
the spin, they came and, you know. But that was during that time, my brother, in the 90s, was a dynamic time, man.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, our people were energized. I thought, you know, on our way to freedom, brother.
Well, you know, that's when I got my... I got my name in the 80s, but I changed it in the 90s. 92 was when it was officially changed.
Yeah.
And it was in those 90s that I came of age. I started wearing African clothes and started, you know, being African, to be African, you know?
Yeah. That time in the 90s, my brother, in Harlem.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Jumping.
That's right. You lived there, didn't you? You lived there at the time, didn't you? Yes.
I lived in Harlem. I was a part of the Garvey movement. I was a part of the African nationalist construction movement.
Yeah.
We were moving. That's when Namibia got independence.
Mm-hmm.
Dinkins was the mayor. Mandela came out of jail. So, it was a dynamic time. Man.
Yeah.
But they found a way to put a damper on it, my brother.
Yeah.
They put a damper. Harlem. Yeah. Harlem ain't the same Harlem. You know,
no, man, because if you hear Jay tell it, man, it's Harlem, you know, it's weak. Harlem. I mean, you know, to me, one of the things that signaled that to me. Now, I went to Harlem in 2001 as part of the of a contingency that came to New York to memorialize the 12 brothers that died in that 9/11 piece. And so to the black firefighters who had their hall in Brooklyn, and we marched, and we went down to 9/11, you know, and that Saturday, many of us went to Al's place, you know, went over to Al's place, and he was there. But
and then had
Perm Daddy.
forget about him.
Yeah, and then had a meal at Sylvia's. Went to Sylvia's and had a meal, you know,
when it was good.
Oh yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
And, but to
you
me, but the signal to me of Harlem decline, as far as I'm concerned, I could be wrong, was Bill Clinton having office in Harlem. You know,
that was the start of gentrification.
There you go. Yeah. So I was right.
Charlie Rangel sold out.
Yeah.
Yeah, 126th Street. Man, I saw. Yeah. I remember when he was there in Harlem, man. Them Negroes circle of Clinton. I was like, you know, I said, what the hell these Negroes doing? But by when he moved into Harlem, it was on its way out, my brother. He was, you know, but during the 90s, 91, 92, it was jumping. Yeah.
Hey, Marcus, you remember when we used to meet at the Harriet Tubman School where the lobby bar for Friday night?
I'm telling you, Jay, you must have seen me there.
I definitely have had the seen you back in that time, because that's when, you know, I had first got into the movement with Sister Soulja.
And
know, before that, I always knew who one of the greatest Pan-Africans there ever was, one of the smartest Africans there ever was. He brought so many people to the Harriet Tubman, the great Alambé Braff. Let me tell you something. People don't know. Alambé Braff was responsible, basically, for all of the African leaders that came to the show like it is with the great Gil Noble. Probably one of the best interviewers ever when it came to telling our story. Alambé was just phenomenal, man. Words can't even describe to you the type of man and what rap Alambe represented to our people. Do you know Alambe was probably the first person that introduced the world, in a sense, to dark-skinned African women as models? He had a business. Him and his brother. Him and his brother were good African. I think his brother's name was Kwame.
His
brother. They had, I tell you, some of the most beautifulest dark-skinned African women you would ever see. And let me tell you something. I ain't never been into nothing light-skinned in my life. And you know, I say that because as a young child, you know, my father could pass for white. He was that light-skinned. I never messed with him till I got to around 8 or 9 years old. As I got older, you know, we became extremely close. But the thing was, I've always had a thing for the dark-skinned chocolate woman. It's my thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm not that dark. But the point was, Alambe introduced to a lot of people, and you know this, Brother Marcus, African culture. So when you talk about Sister Shashi McIntyre, she was in that clip also.
Exactly.
And Shashi was a strong, strong African woman. When we lost her, man, we lost a warrior,
yeah,
a warrior sister, because, you know, you would see her at Lex's. She
right.
had just dropped the book, like maybe a year, two or three before her passing. And, you know, all of the elders, Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, all of them loved Shashi McIntyre, man. I mean, she was like Queen Mother Moore,
mm-hmm,
and Queen Mother, I think her name is Kefa, who was like the mother of Ascot. And it was just a beautiful time, brother. That was the time where, you know, you listen to some of these YouTube scholars, when they was at the knees of Dr. Ben.
Yep.
I know, you know, there's a brother out there, Dr. Reggie. Dr. Reggie was like, you know, the personal assistant to Leonard Jeffries. He was under, you know, Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark. He was learning, he was studying, and all of that. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't know Reggie. I haven't seen him in a while, a long time, to be honest. But I done known these brothers for 30 years almost, man. I mean, you know how you laugh about Shoot Rod Suddy? I mean, Suddy, you know, at a point in time, he was under the studentship of Dr. Ben. I mean, you had some real, real, at that time, serious brothers trying to learn and study and understand what our culture and things was, man. And now you look at it, it's just totally different. I don't even know, to be honest with you, and this is my fault, I don't even know if they still have the lectures anymore. But I remember at one time, let me tell you, on Saturdays on 145th Street and Convent Avenue, brother, it was hot.
It was the least little church.
And the church is still there. And on Saturdays, you would have people out there in their African attire. You would have people out there selling African culture. It was just a totally different time. Now, you don't even see that. I remember when I first got into the culture, my juggler, Amin Ra, who used to, and I know you know Amin Ra, Marcus, because he had the bookstore in the mart called Amin Ra's Isis. I mean, you know, that was my mentor. That was one of my master teachers. And he was selling books in the streets. He was one of the first brothers that was selling books in the street, man. And it got to, you know, the point where he was able to open up at Mart 125. And the crazy thing is, with all of the gentrification that's going on, do you know that eyesore is still there, Mark 125? And Mark 125 That was where I met Khalid Muhammad at, the most beautiful Phyllis Yvonne Stickney. And all sorts of other
Phyllis Yvonne Stickney. Oh man, love her.
Yeah,
man, she's beautiful.
You gotta see her in person, man. You have to see her in her African dress.
Yeah.
The Khalid Muhammad, man. That was African royalty, brother. Let me tell you something. Khalid Muhammad, he was just a real down brother, man. He was a beautiful, beautiful brother. Words can't even describe brother Khalid, man. He was just real. You know, you could approach him, you could speak to him, and he always referred to you as brother. He always embraced you. It was, you know, it's just not what they made him out to be. But let me tell you something. If you went to a Khalid lecture, like I used to go to the slave theater with the great Arthur Maddox, and Khalid would do a lecture, let me tell you, it was about the most entertaining thing you could see. Khalid was no joke. Oh, man, when he would do one of his riffs about the white man, all you could do is stand up at attention and clap, brother. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was a beautiful time. The slave theater, the Harriet Tubman School, 125th Street. That's right. I don't know how they were able to put a damp on it, because we were on our way, brother. We were Harlem.
Oh, man. Friday night let me tell you something, Oshie. Alambe had the African leaders, African diplomats. Anybody that came to the UN to talk about African issues, they were there on that Friday night to give a report to African people. And man, Alambe would break down anything that was going on in Africa. If it was happening in Africa at that time and it was a hotbed, brother, let me tell you something. Alambe would be there to explain it, put forward a pan-African perspective. There were no people, as far as I'm concerned, that had the African intellect of Alambe. And you know the funny thing is, Alambe worked for the white man.
Mm-hmm.
Alambe,
who do you work for, Marcus?
I think it was ABC News.
He worked for ABC and
ABC.
He used to work with Gil Noble. He was a
graphic
guy with Gil Noble. So Thomas Sankara came there. Nujomo came there. A lot of dynamic people.
Wow.
Everybody came there. He was right there. I don't know if you see the picture or not, but I think there's a picture of him on stage with Nelson Mandela. And you know, the crazy thing was, they tried to, I think, keep a couple of the people that was on stage off the stage, but Alambe and them wasn't having it. I know one of the brothers they tried to keep off of the stage and they wasn't having it was Daruba Ben Wahad, who did like 19 years in prison because of COINTEL.
Yeah, man.
I mean, you know, it was a, at that time, let me tell you something. It was a serious, serious time. Now, you really don't see that type of studying going on. You don't really see the type of books and things like that. I know it was one brother, one of the last of the Mohegans. I don't know if he's still out there or not, because I don't go on a 125th Street. Jack Pass, I think it was last year or the year before, but his son is still out there. And you know another brother who be out there, I don't know if he's still out there now, is Sonetta. That's where Sonetta from Sonetta TV has done a lot of his early work right in front of the Mart, Because the funny thing is, I didn't know who Sonetta was when I first met him, because we was in the park one night playing chess. He was playing chess. I was playing backgammon. And that's where I met him. And the first conversation me and him got into was over Pern Daddy. I said Pern Daddy was nothing more than a provocative agent. And that was the first conversation me and Sonetta ever had. You know, me and him, you know, if we see each other, it's like, what's up, or anything like that. I'm not a real friend of his or anything. But, you know, those are the type of cats that was out there. Now, listen, I'm two blocks from 125th Street. I don't know when the last time I've been on 125th Street, but I know when I drive by, it's totally changed. Now it may be a ghost town, but it's definitely totally changed. It doesn't even get to the Point Market where they got a Whole Foods on Lenox Avenue.
Yeah, I know. They tell me, my friend tell me that white folks be walking their dog in Harlem 12 o'clock at night.
Hey, listen, I come in sometimes 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, Marcus, and they out there with their little brother walking them. Got the nerve to speak to you. I had looked at one of those devils, and I just looked at him and shook my head, man. I mean, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, they feel so silly. But let me say this. They haven't really took over Harlem in the manner that one would have thought they would have, because of the simple fact there's too many projects.
Yes.
You know what I mean? In the area. But you remember back in the day, Marcus, when the three white families moved in across from Marcus Garvey Park, and on Saturdays, we used to have drummers.
Drumming.
You know what I mean? Do you know those three families shut down the drumming, brother?
I know. I heard they're petitioning to change the name from Marcus Garvey Park. So I know, because we used to go there in the summertime and to the amphitheater, and they would have shows in Calypso Rose and Cebu. Yeah, so it was
a dynamic time.
Yep.
And every Saturday, the brothers would come out and drum. Yep. Every Saturday. And the white folks, and three families. I'm talking about three families, O.C. They shut it down. You couldn't do it. You couldn't do it no more. And we didn't do anything. We didn't do anything about it. Now, that just show you. That just show you. And the politicians, who I fear one of the most disgusting politicians ever, is that bastard, Sally Rangel, who Negroes love. Just like Negroes love Claiborne and the rest of them, the John Lewis's are. Those Negroes, if you really put them in the context and history, have done more to hurt us as a people than they did good for us. And don't let nobody fool you. It's unfortunately we don't understand what the role of the politician should be for its people, because we haven't really had that many examples. But let me tell you, them Negroes really did a lot of damage to us.
Wow. Can I say something?
Oh, sure. Sure. Go ahead, Queen. Queen Ali.
Thank you. Thank you very much, brothers. Brother Jake and Brother Marcus, Brother Oshie. When I hear the history, our story that you brothers tell on a consistent, regular, daily basis, it draws to me the spirit of our ancestors. And you brothers and our sisters did not sit at the feet of our scholars for nothing, just to have conversations again with those who know. I'm just feeling like you and so many more of us that the brothers mentioned have all of this knowledge and information to give to the people, because we need it. They didn't pour out their lives to us, their very lives, and left here with just what they left behind, their scholarship and their knowledge and the truth of my art, just so we can sit and talk and have conversation with each other. You brothers are scholars yourselves. You really are. You are Jedis?
Jegnas.
Yourself.
Yeah.
Jedis. And you should see yourselves as that. Because the movement continues. The struggle is continuous.
Yes, it is.
The struggle is continuous. And as far as Harlem and those people who were elected to represent us, the politicians, I'll just call them that because that's what they are. They did do a whole lot of damage to us. But we are strong, resilient people, and we have always overcome. And we can overcome this too. And I and the ancestors who did the work, who laid the ground, who walked the path, are asking you. There are a lot of places to teach the youth, the middle people, the elders, to go and teach them. Find places of study. Go back and address the policing system to say, we want to have drumming in our community. That's our culture. We deserve that. And it gives us life again. So you brothers, you know, you pour out a whole lot. Don't let it die with you.
Ashe. Well, you know, whatever I can do, and my part is, of course, putting this information out there, this radio program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, and introducing our community to different people. Like, how many of our people knew Sharshi McIntyre? How many of our people knew Callie House? You know, I had the fortunate opportunity to meet Sister Callie in Chicago at what is now the Dr. Jacob Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies in Chicago, of
yes.
which Brother Conrad Wuerl was also a director. You know, he's not now, but was also a director there, you know. And so, you know,
yes,
for
you
me.
Do. Yes, you do, Brother Oshie. You put out the knowledge, and this is a platform for those of us think tankers to come together and share and then go take that energy back out to the community. You do that. But you other brothers, you have so much energy, and I hear it, and you feel it, and you know it. So go find some after-school program. Mm-hmm. Sir? Yes?
It's a different time now. I find
I don't care. Well,
the
listen.
Most that I can do,
I'm sorry.
Do nothing is educate the kids. Give the kids the basic information on how they should learn their history and their culture and have a vision for the future. That's what I do now. So any young kids that I run into, you know, I try to talk to them in just the basic way, give them an idea on how they should be moving forward. Those were the glory days, I would say. But you know something? Let me say this. Everything, like a friend of mine told me years ago, recycles. So the movement is going to come back. You know, the movement is maybe just a little bit different. But it's going to come back because of the times that we live in and the history and the culture that we're going to have to be a part of. The question now is, are we going to be ready? I think one of the hindrances, to be honest with you, is the lack of manhood because of the overflowness of these monkey men and twisted sisters around. It's too much homosexuality and acceptance of that bull sugar honey iced tea going on that we're going to have to really, really fight against. Because when we were coming up, and when me and Marcus was out there, that homosexual thing was in the closet. That wasn't even interjected other than in that pork chop chicken eating institution. And you know who they was. And you know the one thing about them is they knew their place. Now today, you got the Monkey Man Twisted Sisters, Freak Nation members, trying to tell me what coach is and how I should act and behave. See, that's what we're going to have to put our foot down if we ever going to really get into warriorship. These Monkey Man and Twisted Sisters, they need to learn their place. And there needs to be a pecking order. And them Twisted Sisters and Monkey Man have no place at the head of the food chain. And until we get to that point, we're in trouble.
But how? The question is, okay, now what? Yes, I agree. I share to all of that. But what are we willing to do? And we do it individually every day. But there are bigger platforms and bigger audiences and other groups that you can reach, that we can, you brothers, because you have the knowledge. You know what needs to be done. You've seen it done. You've lived it. So,
go ahead, Marcus. Go ahead, Marcus.
One thing that we can do, because the information then is still relevant now. So what I do, I just spread the information. I just spread the Dr. Amos Wilson, because now this thing is virtual now. We could take it to
yes,
a bigger audience.
Yes. I'm sorry. So, may I say something?
Mm-hmm.
When we were taught, face to face. Now, I'm not saying it just for you brothers directly. I have a mission to accomplish as well. And you do what you can do. Get in where you fit in. If there is a bigger place, a role for you scholars, if you choose to take, if not, then do what you feel as though you should do. And then maybe pass that on to someone who's willing. Because for one thing, we have to be willing. And I'm not asking you to do something that's not in you. I'm just saying we can do so much more that I can't impose. I cannot impose my vision.
Getting a lot of feedback, y'all.
I hear it.
Yeah.
So that's all I want to say. I can't impose. I'm not telling anyone what to do, and I cannot. I wonder if that's coming from my.
No, go ahead.
So I'm going to finish. And say, I cannot impose what I see on anyone. I'm doing what I'm asking you to do.
Right.
And that is share the knowledge on a bigger platform.
Ashe. Well, let me just say this, because, I mean, this radio program is on the internet. So as you heard, you know, Brother Paul from the UK, Sister Bonisiwa, who is in Botswana, and others have called, Brother, from the Caribbean. You know, so that's always there, you know. But also, too, understand, because of the technology of today, we can have video conferences. I had a video conference follow-up from when I went to Venezuela just a few weeks ago. On that video conference was people in Boston, in Venezuela. Let me see, where else was it? Another country it was. But anyway, those capabilities are there. And we need to utilize that, especially now, because of the restrictions because of the virus. If you have a funeral, now the funeral will be, you'll see the picture, the casket, or so forth, and the people will call in to view the service, you know, because they're not going to congregate like that. You know, they're only allowing, they're only saying just 10 or less people, you know. So somebody, and a good friend of mine died just yesterday, you know, and I thought about, you know, his service and so forth. And that's what's happening. But it's also, we could utilize that concept of video particularly, as well as this platform, to get that message out. See? So that's my contribution. And whatever I do, because, you know, I'm always announcing whatever meetings they're going to go on, whoever is coming into town that I feel we should try to go see and hear, you know, whatever programs that are out there. You see the announcements that I make of the things that I feel that need to be supported. Because I'm an African-centered brother. I'm a Pan-Africanist. I talk about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. That's where I'm coming from. That's why, you know, listening to Sister Callie House, talking about Sister Callie House, talking about Sister Shashi McIntyre, and other people that I bring, they're about sovereignty. You know? They're about sovereignty. I mentioned that even though we did not have the Us Lifting Us conference this past weekend, but the brothers and sisters that, you know, made it, you know, they put together a mission statement and a vision, or they reintroduced their mission statement and vision, which I read. And one of the main pieces of that is to develop the idea of sovereignty. I think for African people, understanding this madness that we are experiencing, understanding this world that we are dealing with, we know that we must be a sovereign people. We must decide for ourselves our direction and what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And we're not going to let anybody tell us anything otherwise. We must control our land. We're now talking about 100 million Chinese moving in on Africa. I talked about that Monday, about what the Chinese are doing in Africa, the fact they build these projects, and now those countries can't pay their debt. And now those projects are now run and owned by the Chinese. And then, of course, what the Europeans have done and the Indians have done in Africa. And nowhere on this planet, other than where we are we doing anything in anybody else's land? Nowhere.
That's the point. That is the point. Okay, now what? We see the destruction of our homeland through everybody from everyone in this world. But we've been knowledgeable since the 90s, since the 60s, since the 70s, since the 80s. We have been enlightened.
Yeah,
that's
Queen, I think where we are today, I think the push towards African independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty is more serious today than it ever has been, because we're, even though the majority, unfortunately, of our people are still in the mode of believing that Europeans can be trained to be more moral and more upright and honest and so forth, and that we have just as much right to this system and to this country as anybody else did. And I think that is starting to wane because...
Has the white man never been moral?
Never.
Has the white man
never
been moral?
Never.
Any place on the planet? There ain't no such thing as morality when it comes to the white man. It ain't even really in his dictionary other than to use it that they don't participate or do anything regards morality. It's not something that they implement. And as far as the Chinese go, you got Negroes who talking about it's good that the Chinese are coming into Africa because they'll give you a so-called better deal than the white man. Now, see, that's the type of ignorance and foolishness that we have to deal with when you're not a Pan-African and you're not a nationalist. Mm-hmm. You have absolutely no idea or concept of what sovereignty is and who you should let in your country and who you should not let into your country. Yeah. At this day and age, the Africans should let nobody into their country.
Right.
And they should use South African burning neck ties on any and everyone who comes in.
Well, let me say this, Jay. I know you're on the road because I got to get out of here, but let me say this. I agree with you.
Have a good weekend.
You too, dear brother. Let me just say this. I believe that we should kick everybody out for 10 years to get our stuff together, be real pragmatic and serious. And then when they come back, you want something from Africa, you'll pay fair price. You want some land in Africa, you'll pay a hell of a price because it is ours. Brother Marcus, you got any closing remarks? And then you, Queen, okay? You have the last word, Queen. Brother Marcus, you got any closing remarks?
All I got to say is when all else fail to organize the people, conditions will. And the conditions are prime now because it's going to get worse.
Ashe, thank you, my brother. Sister Queen?
Yes, I'm here. I Africa is for Africans.
That's right. Africa for Africans.
We have work to do.
Yes, we do.
And it's heavier. the less we do, the heavier the job gets. So
that's
let
right.
you know, we got work to do, brothers.
Ashe.
Peace to you all. I love you all.
You too. You
and
have
nothing like a black man.
Ashe. Well, we end this program like we're in all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Brothers and sisters, Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. We shall be victorious. Bibi Fahodie. Peace, family.